Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Our underwriters for Art in the Air are regional art patron Mary Levan, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. Thank you for your generous support. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Thanks to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager, and Tom Maloney, vice president of radio operations at Lakeshore Public Radio. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts-related event, exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or through our Facebook page. Art on the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you this great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. We'd like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight, Tito Sanchez-Williams of Dune Summer Theater. And yet he's just finished having auditions, so we'll ask maybe briefly about that every time. But we also want to introduce Amber Zangari. She is now doing a whole series of summer youth theater classes, which they are enrolling through the Dunes Art Foundation. Both of you, welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
So fun. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having us again.
Thank you so much.
Well, Amber, we're going to go ahead and do you. Tell us briefly about you and then also about what the classes are going to be like.
Yeah. Sure. So my name is Amber Zangari. I am a young married actress that has kind of been all over the United States, but originally started out her career in the Chicagoland area. I used to work for Walt Disney World Entertainment with my husband, but boo COVID. So we're back in the Midwest and we got reacquainted with the Dunes Art Foundation after a summer season in 2019 doing South Pacific and Hansel and Gretel with actually Tito Sanchez. Mm-hmm. So we are very excited to kind of reconnect with them and work with them to rebuild just kind of what the Dunes wants to bring to the community and just kind of up their game when it comes to performances and how we interact with the community with arts and collaboration. So one of my specialties as actually being a teaching artist. So when I'm not on the stage, I've been performing. I've been teaching different arts programs, actually started in China right after school. And I taught a full summer teaching theater, dancing, and acting to students to help them learn English. That was the primary purpose. And then I was like, hey, this is actually kind of fun and I can probably make money with this in America. So when I came back to the States, that's kind of how I started teaching. So that is one of the expertise I've kind of just brought to the Dunes to help out and want to be able to teach. So some of the arts programs that we're introducing this summer is one, musical theater techniques, which is in my primary focus since I've been doing musical theater for about 10 years professionally, almost 20 money non-professionally as a kid. So the idea of that class is that the students will come in and they'll learn about two dance routines and one singing solo. The idea is they'll do one dance that's just full dance, then they'll learn one big group song and they'll all get their own individual solos. And then the last one is combining the skills of what they've learned from dancing and singing and do a big sing dance number. And these can be any songs from either Hamilton, Dear Evan Hansen, The Greatest Showman, Little Mermaid, just some of those popular hits. So that's a really great class for intermediate or even beginning kids that are getting themselves introduced to musical theater, or kids that just want to keep that skill nice and sharp. And then the other class is more for the itty bitties. It's kind of making them do stuff with their hands, integrating some history with Greek theater, and making their own masks, and then storytelling with the masks. So these have different themes, superheroes, villains. We talk about emotions, because I think theater is a great tool to introduce healthy emotion understanding, yeah. Emotional understanding. And so we talk about happy, sad, then we choose different ones, angry, excited, and they have to make a mask and portray maybe a short monologue or do a short scene with their kiddo friends with these masks. So those are the ideas for this class. And then Tito is having another one of his acting classes. Do you want to take that away?
Yeah, just really short. My class mainly focuses, if you have no experience whatsoever being in the theater or acting, my class is perfect. We call it Discovering Acting Techniques, and pretty much I just focus in improv. Then we go over scenes, the big scenes, and we do a little showcase by the end. And they always have fun. This will be the first summer I'm doing it, and it's always extremely rewarding, both for me and the kids, I think.
Well, and then the goal is that they'll also do a little showcase at the end of the classes. Mm-hmm. So hopefully Tito and I will combine our older age groups to do a showcase. We'll do the middle age groups to do a showcase. And then my youngers will just do one little presentation for their parents with their masks.
We don't want to let you get away, Tito. Tell us what we got coming up this summer. I know we had you on before, but just briefly tell us what shows are coming up for the summer.
Yeah. So for this summer, we have Forever Plaid, the musical. That's going to be opening June 3rd. Then after that, we have a gala. We're going to have a cabaret night. We're going to go through 70 years of musical theater, because the theater is celebrating 70 years of its history. So we're going to do a selection of songs, at least two songs per decade, to kind of like explore that. And then we'll go through Midsummer after the gala. And Midsummer will be also outdoor, just like both shows, to be safe, you know, with COVID-19. So we're very excited about Shakespeare, Forever Plaid, and the cabaret night.
Very good.
So with the classes, what are the fees for them?
So the fees for the classes is going to be 5 weeks each class, with the exception of the little ones. The little ones only meet, I believe, twice a week, but the other classes also meet twice a week. Each one, there's $200 for 5 weeks. So you're pretty much, you're getting a bargain, because you're getting 4 hours out of Amber and I in each class per week, and it's 5 weeks of that. So I think it's a pretty good deal for pretty much the entire summer.
And they can find out about that at dunesart.org, youth-theater-classes.
Yes, we use it at www.dunesarts.org. That's our new website. That's where you can see all the information and everything you need.
Okay, that was Tito Sanchez-Williams, Amber Zagari. Thank you so much for being on Art in the Air Spotlight and sharing your information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air, Cynthia Hedge. She runs the Center for Creative Solution, a nonprofit organization that's based in Northwest Indiana. It offers like management training for like businesses and individuals, but also might have an appeal to artists. And she has a broad pool of talented professional speakers and such like that. And so the way to better your organization, your leadership strength, and things like that. Cynthia, welcome to Art on the Air.
Thank you, Larry, and thank you for having me.
Thank you. Welcome.
Well, Cynthia, we want to know a little bit about your background and where you grew up, where you went to school, college, and things like that. And of course, you are an attorney, so you may want to talk about that a little bit. So your journey from where you were to where you are now.
Okay. Well, Larry, I come from LaPorte, and I have lived in Northwest Indiana my entire life, with the exception of 4 years when I went to Indiana University down in Bloomington. And I was down there for 4 years, as I said, and I actually have a degree in journalism and political science. And then I went on to law school here in the region at Valparaiso University School of Law. And after that, I started a private practice of law in Northwest Indiana. And I have been doing lawyering for the last 42 years. I'm now in the process of phasing out my law business because I want to devote more time to my other business, which is the Center for Creative Solutions. So I received a master's degree from the International Center for Studies in Creativity and Change Leadership, which is out in Buffalo, New York, which is part of the New York University system. And that was an opportunity that I had that I had never expected to have. Didn't know when I enrolled in that program whether I would stay. And of course, I stayed and got a master's degree. It was one time where I said that I was there in school for the sole purposes of it was just a delight to learn. And so that was a kind of a highlight in my own journey. You know, I feel as a lawyer, I've been trying to help people solve problems in different contexts. And so I did that, obviously, in a traditional law practice. But I also found that along the way that there were aspects to problem solving that maybe wasn't a good fit with the law. And I looked for other ways to help people resolve issues and problems. And that's what really led me to get my master's degree in the studies of creativity.
And so when did you start the Center for Creative Solutions? Because I know, and I'll preface that with, I know like when I first became aware of it in the paper, and I would say more than a dozen years ago when there were all the activities for World Creativity and Innovation Week, that was my first introduction to you and what you were doing. So how did that all collide?
Well, what happened is that we organized as a nonprofit in 1999. So we've been around for a while. We evolved. We started out really focusing on the management training, the facilitation work that we did. And then at some point, we really wanted to expand it and bring the community together in trying to focus on how can we promote innovation and creativity in our area? What can we do to encourage people to use their innate creativity and innovation, whether it be in the arts or it be in a school setting or it would be in a traditional business setting? Because as you know, creativity, innovation is going around all around us. It's part of the human experience. And we really wanted to, again, focus on trying to engage the community in that conversation. And so as time went on, Esther, we focused on two more public type of activities in each year. So the one was what you mentioned, joining the international community in celebrating World Creativity and Innovation Week, which is April the 15th through the 21st. And it's coming up, and I know that you've been a part of that, thankfully. We've been grateful.
It's been a great blessing in my life. Thank you.
And so that comes in the spring. And then in the fall, we have sponsored what we call an innovation forum, where we most often bring in speakers from all aspects of life to discuss the innovative process and what folks have done in creativity and innovation. And so it's been more of a community forum to discuss a variety of issues that focus on innovation and creativity. And again, our goal is to engage our community in thinking about innovation and creativity. As you may know, Esther, in 2021, the United Nations, which is very much involved in World Creativity and Innovation Week celebration, has identified 2021 as the year of creative economy. And I could talk a long time about creative economy, because what studies show over and over again is that those who are most creative, whether it be in the arts or it be in education or or in business, nonprofit world, those who are most successful, most impactful, make the most money if they're for-profit organizations, are really promoting and really are engaging in the innovation process. So there's a definite link between profitability, which includes impact, and creativity and innovation.
Well, I love that you took it like, and I'm talking, and I know it's, I said more than a dozen years ago, and now I'm realizing it's even, you know, a couple decades ago. So those first events that I became aware of were mostly based on science, but then maybe 5-6 years ago, you also started to broaden it and include poetry and, you know, 2D or visual arts and, you know, just a variety of different arts. So how did that shift happen occur too? Well,
first of all, our staff is, our organization is made up essentially of volunteers. I'm basically a volunteer. And so the volunteers, as you know, in an organization have a lot to do with how events evolve and how the organization progresses. And we were very fortunate to have somebody like Bill Hellyer, who I believe has been on your show before, come in and be a very active participant on our board and really helped us move us into a direction, as you described, where we're focusing a little bit more and including the poetry, the songwriting, the visual arts. And in fact, this coming Creativity and Innovation Week, one of the events is scheduled at the Lebesnik Center for the Arts in Michigan City. So our goal is to try to get every aspect of the community, every part of the community, thinking and talking about creativity and innovation. As you probably know, too, Esther, is, you know, we've tried to do a lot of work with school kids. And we've had schools that have been involved in various ways. One of our partners over the years that has been very active has been the Lake Hills Elementary School over in Michigan City, which is their focus is on STEM. So there's creativity everywhere, and we really encourage more people to join us. The more, the better. And so I think it has evolved over the years, and it continues to grow. And we had a little setback last year. We had many events planned, as I know many organizations did, that just didn't happen. But we're back on the road this year. And you know, the pandemic, even though the events that we had planned didn't happen, the poetry contest, for example, didn't happen, but we were able to, within a matter of a few days, get people from all over the world, literally all over the world, write articles and that we were able to post, in which they talked about their creative processes and what creativity and innovation meant to them and how it enhanced their lives. So we're always looking for community partners, as you know, and so if we have an opportunity, hopefully we'll be able to make a pitch for that in the show.
By all means. I would like to ask you about Creativity and Innovation Week, and I think that's in and around April 15th, and what the connection origins of that are and how it affects the Center for Creative Solutions.
So, Larry, what we were trying to do in embracing World Creativity and Innovation Week was to have a time where our community would particularly focus on this issue of creativity and innovation. The actual idea for Creativity and Innovation Week started with a person up in Canada by the name of Marcy Siegel, who has been a part of helping us celebrate the week here locally. And she had this idea. She tells the story about how she one day read an article in Canada where people were having this very serious and heated discussion about what creativity was. Was it science? Was it, you know, the STEM area? Was it the arts? What is creativity? And I think at that point, she just kind of threw up her hands and said, it's all about creativity. And we need to find a way to communicate that to the world. And so with that, just that one idea, which is how, isn't it, everything starts creative. It starts with one person who's motivated to do something about whatever it is that he or she wants to do. And so from that started about 15 years or so ago. And I knew Marcy because she was associated with the same university where I received my master's degree in creativity and change leadership. She also has a degree. And so through the years, what has happened, communities literally from all over the world have joined in. There are probably, I think there are around 80 countries now represented. They participate actively in World Creativity and Innovation Week. 2 years ago, the United Nations designated April the 21st as World Creativity Innovation Day. So it is a growing movement, and it's been really exciting getting to know all the folks from around the world who are joining in the celebration and finding out what they're doing.
It's beautiful to be part of that experience. I mean,
and it also celebrates Leonardo da Vinci's, whose birthday is in and around that period, who was both a great artist, musician, and scientist, all wrapped into one. So an ultimate creator an example of creativity. He's the whole package, yes.
And Larry, you'll be interesting to know that World Creativity and Innovation starts on April 15th, and there's a reason for that. It has nothing to do with taxes. instead, it is the birthday of Leonardo da Vinci, who we recognize as one of maybe the most creative person. And of course, what made him so creative is that he was so skillful in so many areas. I mean, as we know, he did some wonderful art pieces, as well as doing a lot of innovation in things like medicine and in machinery. The list goes on and on and on. And but we know too that, you know, we all have a little Da Vinci in us. We tend to think we don't. We think it's reserved for somebody else. In our practice of teaching and facilitating in the area of creativity, we're constantly having to remind people that we're all creative to one degree or another. And in fact, one of the things that I want to mention for World Creativity and Innovation, which is so important, is that this year, and we have for the last, I think, 10 years or so, we have one of the programs that we've done is we have established what we call a CREO Award, which is the Greek word for create. And we're looking for nominations from Northwest Indiana of persons who would qualify. And qualification means that you are a person who is really promoting a culture of innovation and creativity in Northwest Indiana. So we've had folks from all over the region who have been nominated, who have received that award. So if any of your listeners have somebody they would like to nominate, please look us up.
When are those nominations open?
Right now, Esther. In fact, you can access the nomination form. It's very simple on our website, which is centerforcreativesolutions.com. They will close April the 10th.
April 10th.
Yes.
So tell us about how a program works. What programs does the center offer, whether it be a business or individual, artists or school? What types of focuses do you have? I'm sure you have like different programs with different speakers, but speak to that if you would, please.
Sure. That's a great question. So we have done training on things like creativity, trying to help people understand the creative process and what they can do to tap into their creativity, their innovation. We have taught classes and things like resiliency or happiness. We sometimes call it happiness. It's resiliency. It's a serious topic, by the way. And we have done programs helping organizations with their strategic plans. We have taught classes in civility and board responsibilities and liabilities for the nonprofit sector. So what we're and in all of our programs, the idea is to, you know, teach and use traditional methods and ideas and materials, but also bring an element of creativity and innovation to it. We tell people that, you know, our emphasis is on creative and on solutions. So we really try to emphasize the positive and how do we get from point A to point B, whatever it is we're trying to do.
One question I want to do, this is outside of creativity, just for a moment with the diverse, is as a graduate of Valpo Law School, how do you feel about Valpo Law School closing up? I mean, I know that's impacted many, many lawyers that I know in the area and friends of mine. So
that's a great question, Larry. And I don't know how other lawyers are perceiving it. I know for me personally, it saddens me a great deal. Always had a fine reputation. And there are many practitioners who in this area of the state, especially that are graduates. So it saddens me. I know things changed, but I wish that it were still in operation.
I know a friend of ours, Larry Evans, who's involved with the law school and, of course, a graduate and a strong supporter. He's very, very sad about that closing and everything. So creative solutions. Give us some examples of things that people can do themselves to explore and discover their own creativity.
Right. That page on your website, The Art of Noticing, I refer to that every once in a while. It just really brings me right back down to that starting point of relaxing.
So there's so many things that you can do to tap into that creativity. And Esther, you mentioned one, just noticing the things that you go by maybe every day, maybe taking a different route to your work or to your play, seeing things that you did not see before, making connections that you did not connect before, being curious. Curiosity is an extremely important part of creativity. Keep asking questions. Never stop asking questions. And if you think about the life of Da Vinci, for example, that's how he went from one topic to another area. You know, he was very skilled in his artwork, for example. So how did he go from his artwork to studying horses, for example, human body? Well, he was doing that as a way to improve his artwork. And so one thing kind of led to another. And one of the stories about Da Vinci that's so interesting is that his patrons, because he had to make a living some way, his patrons often would get frustrated with him because he was so curious that he would start a project for them. And then he would kind of go move on to the next project. And it would maybe take seemingly forever for the project that he was being paid to work for on come to an end. So curiosity is extremely important.
It makes sense, though, because I know for me, once I've learned something, then I want to move on to I don't need to finish it. I've learned what I needed to learn from that. And then I'm ready to move on to the next thing to learn. So right. I can understand his discontent.
And his whole art was motivated from his autopsies and the study of anatomy. Or that's why his many of his works, the muscular structure, he learned that by doing, well, dissections or autopsies of humans and actually animals. And that's why it really influenced the art was driven by the science, I guess you would say.
Yeah. And even, and I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but he got interested in chemistry because he wanted to improve the paints that he was using. So one thing just kind of led to the next. And, you know, he was very open-minded. And I think that's a key factor or characteristic of somebody who wants to be creative. So I've always said that if you expect new ideas to come out of your head, you have to put new ideas into your head, you know, and you need to have a certain openness and a perseverance and an independent spirit, not letting others define you, not letting others discourage you. Those are all practices that we can do. And the other thing that we do, Larry, at the Center for Creative Solutions is we teach people the creative process. There's lots of science that tells us how the stages that people go through in the creative process. And we learn that there are some stages that, you know, you might be better in than I am or vice versa. But if we work together, we can come up with a better project or a better innovation.
Do you only work with nonprofits or do you work with also individuals?
We've worked with individuals, we've worked with nonprofits, businesses, government, religious organizations, professionals. You know, our mission is to help people find creative solutions to their personal, professional, business, organizational, and community challenges.
Well, would you quickly tell us how the people can get in touch with you, like websites and other things like that?
Okay. So as I mentioned, our website is just thecenterforcreativesolutions.com. And you can also reach us by email, which is creativity52@comcast.net. Or you can give me a call at 219-326-7259.
Okay, we really appreciate that. Cynthia Hedge, she's part of the Center for Creative Solutions based in Michigan City, but willing to serve probably anywhere in Northwest Indiana that needs it. You know, Cynthia, thank you so much for sharing about the creativity here on Art on the Air.
Yes, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
And next on Art on the Air, we have Roger Adams, country music singer, songwriter. He planted his roots in country music at a very early age. He's influenced by Roy Clark, Glen Campbell, and he started in Virginia Beach. That's the Virginia Beach Fire Band, a local group, and now kind of makes his home in Nashville and near thereabouts. Roger, welcome to Art on the Air.
Thank you. Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, we always like to start off with, so our audience gets to know you, kind of your life journey of how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about that.
Well, I guess I found my voice at a very early age. My mother used to joke me because I would, as a child, I'd be on my rocking horse and I would sing till I would fall asleep and basically fall off the rocking horse. And I was always watching the cartoons and singing along with the little ping pong ball that would go across the screen and whatnot. But it was always a lot of fun. But my father, he was a guitar player. My brother is 10 years older than me. Both of them have passed now, but they played guitar. And when I was about 6 years old, I started picking up the guitar and just messing around with it. And by the time I was 12 years old, I got really serious about it. And that's when Jim Croce and James Taylor, I mean, there were so many different musical influences that came out. But when I was very young, I used to listen to Roy Clark and Jerry Reed, their style of guitar playing, and I loved it. I loved the songs that they would write. And country music has always just been deep in my roots. And I just kind of followed along that path and started writing songs. Later on, as a teenager, I started my band in Virginia Beach, Virginia Fire Band, and we started out country, and we mixed in some country rock and some southern rock into our style. And we were very popular back in the day. We did very, very well. And it was a whole lot of fun.
Roger, how old were you when you penned your first song? And did you guys sing that one right away? Or how many did it take before you actually started using your material?
I guess I wrote a few bad ones that I never worried about trying to do anything with.
How old were you then, though?
I was probably 17 or 18 years old when I first started thinking about writing songs and messing around with it a little bit. My brother, he was a huge influence for me. He would write songs on his own. And I was kind of a closet singer for a long time. You know, I didn't really want anybody to know that I could sing. And when I was probably in my first year of high school, I had a neighbor, a friend of mine. She was listening to me sing. She was out in the driveway of my house and she could hear me singing. I was upstairs in my room over the garage and she heard me singing. She comes busting in the house. She says, "You can sing and you need to join the chorus at the high school," and this, that, and the other. So she convinced me to join the chorus, and they brought me into the Madrigals right off the bat. And we started doing all the big, you know, school events and different things like that. And it was a heck of a lot of fun. We were on television and all that. So that's what got me over the stage fright. I felt like, you know, at that point, then I could sing. And then I did a couple of talent shows and did very well in those. But I wrote my very first song when I was with the Virginia Fire Band. Mm-hmm. And that song was actually, we did that at a live broadcast. It was actually 41 years ago this month. And that show, we did a live radio broadcast at a club in Virginia Beach. And that song that we performed was included in an album of local talent. And it was called the Homebrew Album. And it was done by a radio station, K94 and ZAM 11 back home. And that album, you can still get it today, believe it or not. But that song is called Six Strings in My Hands. And it just kind of describes the journey of a musician and playing on the road and how, you know, his six strings in his hands made a man out of him. And
you mentioned you started the band when you were 17.
I started the band. Yeah, I was probably late 16, 17 years old. And it started with me and a bass player that I went to school with. And then we picked up a drummer, and then we just put all the pieces together. And, you know, and the band took a life of its own, and it went through some personnel changes and different things like that, like bands mm-hmm. always do. And, but it was a whole lot of fun, and we did a really good job.
So I was going to ask if you performed on stage when you were in high school, like musicals or anything like that?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I, you know, with the Madrigals, we performed at, television shows. We did, different things. There was a place in Virginia Beach called the Little Theater, and we would perform there quite often. As far as an actor or anything like that, no. I've always been the guy to just sing and be a part of a group. Or, you know, and I would sing individually once in a while. But yeah, it was a tremendous amount of fun.
What brought you to Nashville?
Music did.
Okay.
You know, through the years, you know, you find yourself doing what needs to be done to make a living. My father was a general contractor. He was a custom home builder, and he went in business in 1955. I started working with him when I was a small child, and you know, and I was a contractor as well. I built big custom homes throughout Virginia Beach, and that was my way of life for many years. I raised my kids, but then a few years back, you know, life makes its changes, and I decided to go ahead and put music in the forefront, and that's exactly what I've done. And so I got back out and I started singing again, started writing songs and just making a go of it, and it's really turned out very well. I've been real pleased with the response that I've got, and talking with folks like you all and hearing my music play on the radio and different stations around the world is very exciting.
We would like to play the first one. Did I read that it was about your girlfriend Bonnie?
Yes, Bonnie's my girlfriend here, and we're here in Nashville, and you know, as your life starts to change and you do different things, you don't really think about a relationship, but there was just something about the picture that I saw of her, her face, her just her beautiful eyes, and it just captured my attention, and we met and our relationship started to develop. And then about 6 months after we met, I wrote this song about her, and it kind of travels the history a little bit of how those days came about.
But
yeah, Home is a real special song to both of us. It really is.
Well, let's take a listen to it. I believe this is from the Rise Up the Ashes album, Home.
Where there's a road outside my window that leads me out of town. Each day I think of leaving. When that sun goes down, I'll pack my bags and fill it up and head on down the road. Well, I'll head out to the highway on the far side of town, not knowing where I'm going, not knowing where I'm bound. I'll push that pedal to the floor and follow those white lines. And I drank whiskey and smoked cigarettes down a road of broken dreams. I'll listen to that radio and think those crazy things. I'll put the past behind me and head on down the road. But before I get too far away, I always come back home. In 6 months to the day that I saw your pretty face, those eyes and that smile took my breath away. We talked for hours on the phone till we set a date to meet. We were both a little nervous 'cause our hearts were broke before. We both knew what we wanted. We wanted something more. And from the moment that I kissed your face, I've been coming back for more. And I dream of you each night that I sleep. And I think of you with each thought that I think. And I drank whiskey and smoked cigarettes down a road of broken dreams. I'd listen to that radio and think those crazy things. I'd put the past behind me and head on down the road. But those days are far behind me since the day that I met you. I've got a whole new feeling in my heart when you said I love you too. So don't worry about me leaving or heading down the road. Cause before I get too far away, I always come back home. Yeah, before I get too far away, I always come back home.
And that was Roger Adams, and that's from his Rise Up from the Ashes and Home.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
Wow, very moving piece there. Definitely kind of traditional country is the style there, I would describe it.
Yeah, I try to stay in the traditional country scheme of things. You know, I do like a little bit of the country rock element once in a while, but most of the songs that I write, you'll find are along that line.
You know who I'm reminded of? Mac Davis.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. That's quite the compliment.
Yeah, kind of Mac Davis, Glenn Campbell thing. So
yeah, Glenn Campbell. He was He was a big influence for me. He had that. He had such a great guitar style and talent, and he had such a smooth voice.
Yeah, abundant talent.
Oh my gosh! I mean, he was just fantastic. He, you know, truly is. And but you know, you mentioned earlier about what kind of brought me back to Nashville was once I decided to kind of push forward with this, I made my application for the Country Music Association, and they accepted me as a member. And I went to the 52nd annual CMA award show. And so I was out there in the audience, and I just saw it, and I just fell in love with it. And I got to come back to Nashville and visit, and I was able to get on stage and sing at the Nashville Palace that evening after the show. And it just lit a fire in me. And I just had to start coming back to Nashville and doing my thing. And that's when I started pursuing studios and things like that to record an album. And my first album I did back, that was released in July of 2019. And that album had 5 songs on it, a couple of them that I had written and a couple of them that were covers. And very proud of that one as well. And when I did my next album, I wanted to do a full length album, which this one has 12 on it. I'm real happy with it.
Well, speaking of Nashville, the next song is A Heart in Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to be excited to hear that one.
Let's take a listen to it. A Heart in Tennessee, Rise Up from the Ashes.
See the blood on
cradle to the grave. Well, a knife for eye, blood for blood. That's what people say. Shine the way. Cause all the angels are gone. It's just the devil that remains. As they rise from the ashes or crawl out from the grave.
Roger Adams from his album A Heart in Tennessee. So, wow, that's
also
wonderful.
Also Colorado and Miami, yeah. And many other destinations.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, I don't know if we're on yet or not, but Bonnie is the subject of a lot of songs that I've written. And A Heart in Tennessee is along those lines, you know. And I spend so much time on the road, driving back and forth from Nashville to Virginia Beach. I have this little voice memo on my phone, and I'll be driving and I'll come up with a song idea or a line or a hook, and I record it. And I guess it was a month before I started really writing that song. I was driving down the road and I was thinking to myself, she's got eyes as big as Colorado. And I said, I can do something with that. So I recorded myself saying that line. And so then it went on to Skin Like Miami Beach and The Smile as Big as Texas and A Heart in Tennessee.
Roger, if you give up that 11-hour drive, you're going to lose a lot of contemplative time.
No, I come up with ideas all the time, and I use that voice recorder like it's going out of style. The biggest problem is remembering what I've recorded.
So, Roger, has anybody covered one of your songs?
Not yet. Nope, I'm still waiting for
that.
We'll
have to put that in the wish list.
That's right. Yeah, hopefully one of these days somebody will hear something that they like and say, you know, I'd like to record that myself. And I would love for that to happen. That would be a great feeling.
You know, Roger, we want to give you a chance to tell us about your website, how people can listen to your music and everything. Got a minute left, and then I want to close out with From Rise Up the Ashes, As If I Didn't Know. So tell us how people can find your music and find about you and maybe find about your concert dates.
RogerAdamsMusic.com. That is the best way to keep up with what's going on in my world. All the event dates are listed in there, and there's music videos, there's merchandise for sale, there's tons of pictures, you know, throughout the website of me performing and different folks that I've had the privilege of meeting over the years, and I really enjoy it.
Okay, well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. Roger Adams, now in Nashville from Virginia Beach. We really appreciate you coming on, and we're going to close out this segment with you, Roger, with Rise Up from the Ashes, As If I Didn't Know. So thanks so much for being on Art in the Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know my plane won't land till midnight. I know she'll be asleep when I get home. She understands her working man and knows she has to spend some nights alone. I never once heard her complain. She just keeps on rolling with the flow. I tell myself I'm lucky, as if I didn't know.
the baby lying there on my side of the bed. Sleeping like a woman who doesn't have a worry in her head. Well, I don't want to wake her up, so silently I'll slip out of my clothes. Ain't she the perfect picture? As if I didn't know. I see contentment on her face, the way that pillow frames her long dark hair. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm looking at an angel lying there. On the bedside table, I see she's written my name on a note. It says, honey, I love you, as if I didn't know. It says, honey, I love you, as if I didn't know.
You've been listening to Art in the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week. Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP and Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP Station Manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary Levan, Arts Patron. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, B-R-E-C-H.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself, you are. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart.